Welcome to the Math Ed Podcast. My name is Sam Otten from the University of Missouri. And today my guest is Anne-Sophie Supplee, who is from Belgium, working at the University of Leuven. So Anne-Sophie, thanks so much for being here.
Thank you very much for inviting me. It was quite a surprise, but thank you.
Well, I saw your article, and to me it's just kind of an intriguing one, kind of a unique article, not just because I have preschool and elementary children, but I think just in general, about human reasoning and the way that we look at the world and look for patterns and sometimes look too hard for patterns. To me, it was a fascinating article and I wanted to chat with you about it. So I appreciate you joining. The article is called, "It is Probably a Pattern. Does spontaneous focusing on regularities in preschool predict reasoning about randomness 4 years later?" And this is from the journal Educational Studies in Mathematics in volume 112. So Anne-Sophie, to me, this is kind of like it's a math education article, but it's also kind of about us as human beings, because as humans, we really like patterns and we tend to gravitate towards patterns more than randomness. Randomness kind of rubs us the wrong way and we aren't sure how to understand it. So I was wondering if you could just talk to us about how does that pattern recognition, how does that show up in life? And why is this an important aspect of reasoning for us to think carefully about and better understand?
Difficult question. I totally agree with you that humans have a strong preference for patterns. They really love patterns. I think music is a good example of it. We all like music, and I think music are just auditory patterns, or also the habits that we have, the several habits that we all have. For example, in the morning, I tend to do things in a certain order. I first jump in the shower, then brush my teeth, and then I get dressed and I do it in the same order every day. So I think patterns are make life predictable, and they are helpful because it simplifies things. But I also think that patterns, they helped us to survive in the old days, but also today. Like, for example, in the old days, when you saw that each of your tribe got sick after eating a certain type of berries, that you would think twice about eating that same type of berry. So yeah, I think it has also some survival value. I think that the fact that we're natural pattern seekers is something that we have to keep in mind also when we reason about probability or randomness, because the tendency to look for patterns and recognize patterns and see patterns might be so strong that we also tend to see patterns or recognize patterns when none are actually there. I think the gambler's fallacy, I don't know if you're familiar with it, is a great example of it. When, for example, your sister is expecting a fourth baby and she already had three boys, chances are that you would guess that the next one is a girl, because that's more representative for the pattern that you would expect with for randomness. Does that make any sense?
Yeah, it's like they're thinking, you know, flipping a coin has been tails, tails, tails. Well, then heads are due. Like the next one definitely should be heads. And you're thinking that, like, because of the last stuff that's happened, it needs to right itself the next time, when actually it's still going to be a 50-50 chance even on the next one.
Exactly. Yeah. And we think that a random sequence should look chaotic and it shouldn't look as ordered. So we're actually looking for random pattern, and the pattern is actually the chaotic part in it.
Right. So we like patterns, we look for patterns, sometimes we overlook for patterns, but then you're also saying that randomness, we think randomness should be completely without pattern at all scales. Like, if we look at it closely, if we look at it from far, it should be like chaotic, everything everywhere.
Yeah, exactly.
For me, it's also interesting, like you said, people liking patterns, there's some survival value to patterns. And so, you know, there's reasons that we're drawn to patterns. But, you know, I have a family member who recently was saying, there are no coincidences. And he's like basically trying to see patterns in like world events and things that are happening. And then for me, I'm like, no, there has to be coincidences. Like, just statistically, there's so many events in the world. Some of them have to just be randomly occurring, you know, but he has this desire to really, like, no, see that everything is linked and everything is somehow causing the other things.
Yeah, I can agree. I think there is a lot of individual differences of, also in our tendencies to look for patterns in our surroundings. It's also what we saw during the research that even the children that we gave the patterning task differed greatly in their tendency to spontaneously create patterns. So I can definitely understand that also when we're adults that we differ in our tendency to look for patterns. But yeah, you always have people that's believing coincidence, and then you have the people that don't believe in coincidence. I think it's a discussion that has been going around a lot, and I think maybe I don't know if it's a scientist as well, the family member.
Not quite, no, not quite.
No, I think as a scientist you might be believing a bit more in coincidence, and yeah, I don't know.
Well, bring us to the study. So we have this preschool context. I wonder if you could tell us a little bit more about the context where there's focusing on regularities in preschool, but then there's reasoning about randomness later. So I wonder if you could just tell us a little bit about the context of that study and then the team that you got together. How did this team come together to look at this data?
I conducted a PhD that was under the supervision of Professors Patrick Ongena and Wim van Doren, which are also the co-authors, or two of the co-authors of this paper. And my PhD was focused on the development and stimulation of probabilistic reasoning in young children. So my interest in children's reasoning about randomness was kind of evident in that sense, because it fitted within my PhD project. But the PhD project was also part of a larger research project in which we followed multiple mathematical abilities, and we wanted to look at the development and the simulation of multiple mathematical abilities. The other mathematical abilities were general numerical abilities. Also proportional reasoning and computational estimation, and one ability was also patterning. So it was my colleague Nora Wijns who conducted a PhD project on the ability of patterning in young children, and she's also a co-author of the current paper. Yeah, because we were working together for each mathematical ability, there was a separate PhD project, and we were all working together because we all conducted a longitudinal study on the same sample. So we worked together to collect data, organize the data collections. We worked together a lot, and we also always wondered how the different mathematical abilities that we followed would relate to each other. And for me, I was conducting research on probabilistic reasoning, and I always suspected that, for example, proportional reasoning or numerical abilities or even computational estimation would correlate positively with probabilistic reasoning. But with patterning, I always wondered because, yeah, Nora Wijns and I, we would discuss during informal conversations, and we were wondering how would our two, we call it work packages, relate to each other because it felt like two opposites. So, and then from one thing came another, we started to look into it. I read more about the work of Kahneman and Tversky. They talked a lot about, yeah, people as natural pattern seekers, and that explaining several fallacies and stuff like that. So we started to talk about it, and then we decided, Nora Wijns, she already collected data on the spontaneous focus on patterning when children were in, or the children of our sample were in kindergarten, I think. Then we decided to add another task to the set when children were already older to look at how they understood randomness and to see what the relation would be between randomness and the tendency to spontaneously create patterns or regularities.
And for me, this is one of the reasons I was drawn to the article is having that data across the different parts. And it's interesting that you have different dissertation focuses on different parts of the project. I could almost do a whole nother podcast asking you questions about how the project brings together dissertations in like a systematic way. That's kind of a cool idea. But to me, it was kind of unique to have that data from the preschool age and then later have data from those children when they're in the elementary school age. And then looking at that, what's the relationship between their focusing on regularities when they were very young and now the way that they think about and respond to randomness kinds of situations when they're in elementary school. I really would encourage the listeners to go to the article because there's a lot of methodological details to how you did this analysis. But while you're here, I wonder if you could just tell us a little bit about what you found in that relationship of the looking at regularities and looking at randomness.
So one part of the article, we just wanted to understand more about children's reasoning about randomness in elementary school, because there's not too much known about it yet. There are a few articles that did similar experiments, but not that many. And if we looked at the performance of children in our study, we thought that they actually did a bit better as we would have suspected based on the few studies that were conducted. So the correct answers were always the most popular answers, and children's total score on the task probabilistic reasoning wasn't as low as we would have suspected based on previous studies. But then the most remarkable finding, and maybe the reason also behind writing the article, was the relation that we found between, on the one hand, children's tendency to spontaneously create regularities. We just gave kindergartners a set of blocks and we asked them build a tower. That was the only instruction that they got. We noticed that some of them made a very structured or ordered tower with organizing the blocks per color or making a pattern that was like green, blue, yellow, green, blue, yellow. And then we had a group of children that just made what we would call a random tower. They would just build the blocks as fast as they could, and there would be no pattern, or we could not recognize a pattern behind it. Then we looked at how children performed on a probabilistic reasoning task 4 years later, and we looked whether their tendency to build or spontaneously create a pattern or a structured tower predicted their behavior on the task about reasoning about probability. And we found that children who spontaneously created a pattern in their tower, they were more likely to give answers, incorrect answers or correct answers that would be predicted by the representativeness heuristic. And let me explain what the representativeness heuristic is. That's actually linked to the gambler's fallacy we talked about earlier on. If children received two sequences of coin tosses and one sequence would be five times in a row heads and the other one would be two times heads, one time tails, and two times heads again, then the children who spontaneously created a pattern would be more likely to choose the second sequence because that looked more chaotic, that looked more equiprobable. So all these things that we know about randomness. Does that make any sense?
Yeah, they weren't as comfortable with just the heads, 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 even though that could very well happen from just random coin flipping. You could have all heads in a row,
yeah,
right? But that sort of didn't sit well with them, right? They wanted the tails in there because they think, like, quote unquote, there
chaotic.
Should have been a tail.
Yeah, exactly. That looked more chaotic. And so children who spontaneously created a pattern in kindergarten, they were more likely to give these type of erroneous answers 4 years later. The effect was small though, but we do have to keep in mind that they only received actually one item in kindergarten. We only gave them one set of blocks and they could build a tower once. So there wasn't much room for variability. And also we looked at their behavior 4 years later. So we felt it was still...
It seems to me like it's still a hint of something that might be worth, you know, further confirmation or something like that.
Yeah, it would be interesting to look into it more elaborately.
We don't want to just assume there's a pattern, you know, because it could just be randomness in the data, but it's a little bit of suggestion that there might be an association between these two things.
Exactly. Yeah.
Well, I wonder too about, you know, seeing this hint of this association, and it does make a little bit of plausible sense that, like, if they're drawn to patterns that then they have a different relationship to randomness. So there's some plausibility to it as well. But I wonder if you think about it, what you see as some of the implications of this research. And you talk in the article about there's no harm, and there actually could be some value of exposing children to randomness, like letting them get a little bit more comfortable with randomness and all of its different shapes and forms, and how randomness can be kind of random. It doesn't always look perfectly chaotic. So I wonder if you could say a little bit more about how you think that could be an implication of the work of exposing children to randomness, or if you see other implications.
Yeah, I think we can do a lot more early on in school when it comes to randomness, because the school curricula, they are quite deterministic. Like we all learn that 2 and 2 is 4, and it's always 4. While, yeah, randomness and probability, there is a lot more room for uncertainty, and children aren't really confronted with that a lot in school, I think. So I think we could do a lot more class experiments with children, in which they learn about randomness using dice, spinners, blind draws, coin tosses, and stuff like that, but also be more attentive to it when children play with board games, have conversations about it. What does the dice do, or what do the dice do in the game? Why are they important for the game? Also, the mechanism behind those things. How do we create fairness? How does it relate to randomness? Ask them, why is it fair when teams are divided by blindly grabbing a colored vest or something like that? Also having conversations about how elections work, why are elections fair and stuff like that. We also conducted an intervention study during my PhD, in which we looked if we could stimulate children's probabilistic reasoning from an early age. And we did find that it is possible to stimulate children's reasoning about probability and randomness already in second year of elementary school, which is often a lot earlier than children are exposed to it in school right now at the moment in many countries. So yeah, I think there's still a lot of room for expanding the curriculum for probabilistic reasoning, or for the benefit of probabilistic reasoning. Mm-hmm. We always see that a lot of children struggle with statistics and probability later on in life. I don't know how it is in Missouri, but in Belgium, statistics was a big part of the psychology education program, and it was also one of the main struggles for students. So maybe if we expose children to uncertainty from an earlier age, or we learn them also about uncertainty, or we learn that it exists and that it is important to take into account, maybe some of our struggles with coping with uncertainty later on will be a bit less. I don't know.
Yeah, this is resonating with me. And you mentioned how school can sometimes be deterministic. Like, to me, I see several things, you know, in politics and religion, and that sometimes leans toward being deterministic, like everything is according to a plan, or everything is how it's supposed to be, or authoritarianism, like, well, everything is being done according to the person in power. But I kind of agree with you about just this general notion of there is uncertainty in life. There are things that are not deterministic. There's randomness that happens in the world. And for me, it's kind of like our schooling, our political, our religious system. If those all could make a little bit of room, or help with a little bit more understanding of randomness, I feel like that could be a benefit. But I know I'm going onto a bigger domain here, but it all is inspired by, you know, this line of reasoning.
But I completely agree with it. So, yeah.
I've been speaking with Anne-Sophie Supplee from Belgium, and I really appreciate you making this work for this interview across time zones and across ocean. I do have one final question I want to ask. So in the podcast, I often ask people, you know, what their alternative career would be. And in your case, you know, from your PhD, you have actually kind of shifted into a different sort of career. I wonder if you could just let us know what you're doing now, and also maybe compare academia and research to like the clinical sort of work that you're doing now.
So currently I work as a psychology in the University Hospital of Leuven, and I work with children that have cancer or several types of blood diseases. So it's a very different thing that I have been doing the past 5 years. And yeah, if you ask me what is the difference between my work now and my work at the university, I think during my PhD or in research in general, we always tend to look for what works best for the average person or what does work on average. We're very interested in averages, and outliers is something that we have to deal with, and it annoys us. And now that I work in the clinical fields, I noticed that I come into touch more with these outliers, or it seems that outliers are more of the average person. Does that make any sense? That there are a lot more of individual differences, or these individual differences become more important now in the clinical field compared to what it was during my research time at the university. It's the typical person doesn't really seem to exist. It's more that we're all a collection of outliers. I don't know.
Yeah, and I've heard that too with researchers versus teachers. Again, yeah, researchers are kind of trying to draw bigger conclusions from sets of things, but teachers have to see each child as an individual, and you can't just average them together with other, individuals.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly what I mean.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for doing that work, and thank you so much for publishing your study as well, and it was really great talking to you.
Yeah, no thanks. It was a nice experience. Thank you.
Thank you.